Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Public lands in the United States are under threat. The Trump administration has outlined a plan to give away 640 million acres of national lands to oil, gas, and mining companies. Last month, The Guardian launched a campaign to raise money for This Land Is Your Land, a new series on the government's giveaway of public lands. And readers have contributed almost $100,000 to the effort. That's how much people care about this issue. According to The Guardian, this year, we have witnessed an unprecedented attack on this national legacy. Between an effort in Congress to sell off millions of acres of public property and the Trump administration's dubious review of national monuments, this has proven to be the worst government for public lands in American history. In fact, on the front page of today's Chronicle, there is a story called Battle Lines Drawn Again on California's Hard-Won Coast, Feds Under Trump Review Sanctuaries for Energy Development. According to The Guardian, the Republican platform now contains a commitment to give away an unspecified portion of 640 million acres of American land to the states. The House of Representatives changed congressional rules this year to make it easy to dispose of public land without having to account for the loss in federal revenue. The very important point here is once this land is transferred, most of it will be gone forever. So today we're going to talk about what it will take to ensure public lands stay in public hands. Katie Enders is a contributing editor at The Guardian. She edits the This Land Is Your Land series. She's also a 2017 Knight Science Journalism Fellow. She lives in Santa Fe and joins us from the studios of KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi, Katie. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks so much for having me on.
Great to have you. We're also joined in studio by David Helvarg, an award-winning journalist, author, and documentarian. David is executive director of Blue Frontier, an organization that works to protect our oceans, coasts, and communities. And David is the author of The Golden Shore, California's Love Affair with the Sea. David is local to the Bay Area, and he joins me in studio. Hi, David. Thank you for coming in.
Hey, Rose. Thanks. Pleasure.
Nice to have you. And you can watch our interview on Facebook. You could head over to the KALW Facebook page. Katie, I want to start off with you. I was so excited when I learned that The Guardian was launching this new series, This Land Is Your Land, and congratulations on raising $100,000, almost $100,000. I know your goal was $50,000. According to your initial piece, the inspiration for this series came directly from readers. You report that when The Guardian covered Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz of Utah's plan to sell off 3.3 million acres of national land earlier this year, The Guardian piece attracted almost a million readers and generated 61,000 comments on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, the outpouring of interest was just unprecedented. I think it's, you know, it's hard to present environmental coverage in a way that really galvanizes people, and this certainly did. Environmental stories are you know, really important to a lot of people, but generally they can be a little bit dry, they can feel a little bit removed. For Americans, public lands are just a you know, bipartisan popular thing.
Right.
So it was remarkable to see these stories about public land transfer reaching every corner of the country. And on the back of that, we decided to build a series specifically around threats to public land.
You report that over 95% of the population thinks protecting national parks, for example, is important, and 80% would pay higher taxes to do so. David, at a time when there's so many distractions right now, Donald Trump's tweets of the day, these stories are getting a lot of attention, but in some ways you really have to look for them. So can you talk about the importance of a series like This Land Is Your Land?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, there's a lot of clown show going on in D.C., and it's distracting from a lot of his appointees, Pruitt at EPA and Zinke at Interior, and certain Wilbur Ross now at the Department of Commerce, who are moving very rapidly to dismantle generations of regulations around environmental health and safety, as well as open up our public lands and waters. I mean, literally. And I'll talk about it later, but today is the last day in a 30-day comment to respond to their plans to open up 11 national marine monuments and national sanctuaries, including four here in California. And this is our coast, as you say. It's the cover story in the San Francisco Chronicle. But, you know, at the same time, healthcare is in play. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't think during the Cold War the Russians really wanted to want to take over America. But I guess you live and learn. So there are a lot of distractions. And the reality is it's not just our health is a threat. It's the health of the ecosystem that supports us all.
I'm glad you brought up the comment period because people are so overwhelmed right now. And I want to make sure on this show, hopefully every day, that we let people know how they can get involved and to also let them know what people are doing on the ground, for example, to ensure that public lands stay in public hands. So people who are passionate about this issue, talk about the importance of commenting by the end of the day.
Literally by 8:59 our time tonight. This is comments on protecting their under President Trump's, what does he call it, our offshore energy executive order. They're trying to open up national monuments and sanctuaries. Any expansions they're trying to roll back. It's questionable legally, but they're pushing it, including for Papahanaumokuakea, which is the largest 500,000 square miles. George W. Bush created it. It was like his blue asterisk, you know, arguably bad on the environment. He gave us our first great national park in the ocean northwest of Hawaii, and it was expanded to 500,000 square miles by President Obama. This is where over 70% of the nation's coral reefs reside. It's incredible habitat, endangered species, sea turtles, tiger sharks, monk seals. And right here closer, and these are like national parks in the sea. Closer to shore, these are like our community parks, California's four marine sanctuaries in the Channel Islands and Monterey and right here in the Bay Area, the Farallones and Cordell Bank. And these, you know, these were recently expanded after 20 years of public input and activity. Lynn Woolsey spent her whole congressional career working to expand the Farallones and Cordell Banks so that now one-third of the coast in our marine sanctuary is protected from offshore drilling. And they're saying there wasn't enough public input, therefore we're giving you 30 days to comment. We'll hold no public hearings. It's all about – and he's very clear about it. It's all about opening up the California coast and – the Pacific to oil drilling. You know, in my own opinion, the modern environmental movement started with the Santa Barbara oil spill in 1969. It was the same year that the Cuyahoga River in Ohio caught fire. And that was the beginning. And back then, it really, the conflict was between, you know, energy and marine pollution. Today, it's also a product liability issue. We know the science tells us this product used as directed is going to overheat our planet and acidify our seas. So there's just no justification. So literally they've given us 30 days. We've got about 80,000 comments in the last few weeks. There's another 500,000 comments on the marine monuments that were out of the 2.5 million that went into Interior. They were transferred, somehow redacted. They were transferred over to Department of Commerce, but illegibly. So hopefully those 500,000 comments. We want to get another 20,000 today. And, of course, the Department of Commerce has made it very hard to get to their comments section. So the easiest way for listeners is just to go to saveourmarinesanctuaries.org. Okay. And from there you can make your comments pro or con, although 95% so far have been Save Our Sanctuaries. This is where we recreate, have fun, and it's a huge boost to our California economy. I mean, you know, billions of dollars literally in tourism in Monterey and Santa Barbara and elsewhere.
You mentioned all of these beautiful spaces, and the Chronicle reports that under Trump's order, the Department of Commerce is reevaluating the sanctuary status of areas granted protection within the past decade. Katie, can you also talk about the importance of issuing a comment by 8:59 Pacific time tonight?
Yes, absolutely. Make your voice heard. I mean, there are groups that are looking at, you know, doing the analysis on these mass public review opportunities. You know, there have been great preliminary analysis on the comments on national monuments. They were overwhelmingly positive, overwhelmingly people saying, you know, please don't touch the national monument in my backyard. Please don't touch the bear's ears. It is really important, but you know, there's more that needs to be done. I think, unfortunately, what we're seeing with Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke is that he's really quite selective in the groups that he's inclined to listen to. So the best thing you can do is figure out the group in your backyard that best represents you and that has a chance of getting heard by Zinke. There have been a couple of emergent environmental groups that have come out as really hard hitters under this administration, the Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Those are sportsmen's advocacy groups, but they're also doing yeoman's work and primarily working on conservation. And those are the groups that Zinke is meeting with. So it's sort of a matter of continuing to be vigilant and continuing to see how you can amplify your voice on both a local and a national level.
Well, as the This Land Is Your Land series points out, that the public backlash had an immediate impact when Congressman Jason Chaffetz of Utah attempted to sell off 3.3 million acres of national land. Chaffetz was forced to pull support for his own legislation after he got 61,000 comments. So these comments do work, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite remarkable. If you look at the way Jason Chaffetz stepped away from his own bill, he posted a photograph of himself in hunting gear with a hunting dog, saying, you know, the groups that I care about, I can't remember the exact language, but it was something along the lines of the groups that I care about and listen to have made it clear that this is not something that I should be supporting, which is very interesting. I mean, I think for a lot of us who don't hunt and fish, the idea that, these hunting groups are really making a difference is a little bit foreign. But it, by and large, was groups like Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and the Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership and those, you know, Western constituents who don't necessarily identify themselves as environmentalists or necessarily even Democrats, stepping up and saying, do not touch my backyard.
And yet the head of the Teddy Roosevelt Alliance just this morning said he's very disappointed in Zinke. I mean, here's a guy who represents himself as a Teddy Roosevelt conservationist. But Roosevelt ranted against the great special interest, and clearly Zinke is showing his only interest is to follow the administration's orientation to open everything up to oil, gas, and fracking. So, he sort of presents himself as a sportsman because he hunts, but, you know, like Bill Maher pointed out, it's not really a sport if one of the teams doesn't know it's playing.
So true. Again, the website is SaveOurMarineSanctuaries.org. If you would like to comment, you've got to do it by 9 o'clock, 8:59 tonight, Pacific time. The Channel Islands, Monterey Bay, Cordell Bank, and the Greater Farallones are in jeopardy. Now is your time to make your voice heard. Katie, we have listeners who don't use computers. Do you know if there's a way to comment offline?
Definitely call Zinke's office, call your representatives. Yes, again, we really need politicians in Western states, Republican politicians, hearing from their constituents saying, this is not good for the American people collectively. So I think everything that I understand on these issues is that calls are really making a difference. So comment online if you can, but call up your rep, call up the Department of the Interior.
And I have the Interior's number, but definitely call your reps. The Interior's phone number, and I'll repeat this a few times, is 202-208-3100. 202-208-3100. That's the phone number for the Interior Department.
And in terms of the monuments and the marine monuments and sanctuaries, it's actually the Department of Commerce that NOAA comes under, and that's Wilbur Ross, the billionaire. You might try and reach out to him.
Okay.
Getting the comments, a lot of people will think, well, they're going to ignore comments, but the comments are also going to be used in the lawsuits to come. They're playing with the law in a very loose way. And the state of California is very determined. We have a series of laws that are at the county and municipal level that go back to the 1980s that forbid any offshore infrastructure coming onshore. The state may very well reach out and protect the areas that they try and take away. There's a real dedication, a real interest. I mean, both that California is standing up not only around climate but around ocean protection. And it's not just the monuments and sanctuaries. They want to open up all the areas that President Obama protected, including the Arctic and the Atlantic seaboard, the Paul Zunfelt, who's the commandant of the Coast Guard and a friend, he just came out publicly in front of Congress saying that there's no capability to respond to an oil spill in the Arctic, that there's no capability to do a SAR, a search and rescue, that there aren't even basic aids to navigation, and that his agency, which has responsibility for the Arctic, is just saying that at this time in 2017, it would be essentially insane to open up our public waters. And of course, the science says we have to leave 70% of the known fossil fuel reserves under the ground and under the seabed. So again, it may be an opportunity to talk about not just the history of offshore oil, which is going into new frontier waters and creating disasters. And this goes back to the first offshore drilling in the world, which was right down in Summerlin, California. It's always been a series of disasters. But even if they didn't drill and spill, they would still be killing us through the science of climate that tells us it's time to move on to clean energy. Coal and oil were great energy systems for the 16th and 19th century. We're in the 21st, and the big area of job creation and energy is all in clean energy.
David Helvarg is an award-winning journalist, author, and documentarian. He's executive director of Blue Frontier, an organization that works to protect our oceans, coasts, and communities. And he's author of the book, The Golden Shore, California's Love Affair with the Sea. We're also joined by Katie Enders, contributing editor at The Guardian, where she edits the news series, This Land is Your Land. I hope you can check that out. It's at yourcallradio.org. Katie is a 2017 Knight Science Journalism Fellow. Today, we are talking about how to keep public lands in public hands at a time when so much is under threat. The administration has outlined a plan to give away 640 million acres of national lands to oil, gas, and mining companies. And on today's front page of the Chronicle, there's a piece about what will happen to the California coast. And today is the last day to comment on this. Head over and be sure to share this with friends and colleagues. Save our marinesanctuaries.org. And if you don't have access to a computer, the Department of Interior's number is 202-208-3100. And you can join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have a question or a comment about the importance of public lands, if there's anything you'd like to add to the conversation, you can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, tweet us at yourcallradio, and then the line for the Secretary of Commerce is 202-482-2000. And we'll put those on our website and I'll repeat them throughout the show. Let's talk a little bit about the history of public lands and the Antiquities Act, which was introduced by President Teddy Roosevelt back in 1906. And it gives presidents the ability to name areas of federal lands and waters as national monuments. Katie, can you talk a little bit about the Antiquities Act?
Yeah, so the Antiquities Act has been used for 100 years to protect particularly important areas of public land, either those that have cultural significance or environmental significance. It's, you know, occasionally been controversial in the 30s and 40s, but there is absolutely no precedence for reversing a national monument designation. There are a number of groups that are lining up prepared to sue the administration over its moves to reduce or roll back protections for national monuments. Patagonia has already said that it will sue over bear's ears. When the review is completed, Zinke is supposed to send his suggestions for all 27 monuments under review to President Trump by August 24th. Once that is sent, you can bet that there will be a number of private or nonprofits and a number of companies lining up to sue. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how that shakes out.
David, what would you add about the Antiquities Act and just knowing about the history of public lands and how we got to this place?
Well, when I wrote my book, The War Against the Greens, that was about the organized environmental backlash of the 1990s. And you realize there's a real history that Teddy Roosevelt was getting grief from what they called the boomers in those days, which was the mining interests and the loggers. And they would go on public lands, publicly declared public forests, and set arson fires where they couldn't steal the timber. And the Western newspapers wrote there wouldn't be enough land left to bury a man in. So the opposition to protecting our public resources and public lands and public waters has always been there. And with the ocean, we tend to be about a century behind, realizing this is our last great wilderness range. The 1972 National Marine Sanctuary Act essentially protects unique environmental and historical places in our waters, in our public seas. And just 2 weeks ago, I was down diving the Channel Islands. And again, it's every dive's unique. You know, I was having a sea lion coming around, posing for us. There was a harbor seal. There were all the lobsters in the caves. You had swim-throughs. And then you find, like, a nudibranch, which is like this beautiful marine snail, all purple and orange.
Wow.
And it kind of reminded me, John Muir, I think, said, you know, every natural object is a piece of divinity. So it's not just the huge economic benefits of protecting these waters. It's again, like Thoreau said, you know, heaven's not just above our head, it's below our feet. And I just amend that to say below our flippers.
It's so true. And I love reading about that. I love snorkeling. It's one of my favorite things to do. There's so much research now being done about the far depths of the ocean where it's dark all the time. And in order to do that research, we need to ensure that those spaces remain protected.
And some of the world's top marine research is being done out of Monterey Bay because we have a canyon, our submarine canyon, that's deeper than the Grand Canyon. I've been out with the research vessels, and literally you can, before your coffee cools, you're in the deep ocean. This whole network of science institutes, 21 institutes around Monterey Bay are coming out to defend the sanctuary. It's a great research center. It's a great center of unknown ecological wealth. I mean, when I go diving, there are really two wonderful habitats to visit. So there are coral reefs that are being hugely impacted. We're in the third year of a global coral bleaching event. And there are the kelp forests of California. Yeah. And these are what we protect in our marine sanctuaries under attack today.
Definitely see Chasing Coral. It's now on Netflix. We did a show about it a couple weeks ago. And then there's another one called Chasing Ice. Those films just go very well together if you want to learn more about climate change and how it's affecting our reefs and glaciers.
We just had our sixth biennial Blue Vision Summit in D.C., the largest citizen lobby for the oceans. And we opened with that film, Chasing Coral, and our bluefront.org Facebook links to what we've created, Sea Party 2018. We want to make sure that when people have their constituent meetings and go back, when the politicians on their breaks are having town hall meetings, that they're going to encounter people who aren't just angry over their loss of their health care, but the health of their ocean.
Can you talk a little bit about what this administration wants to do with our coastline? Because these companies know that there would be a massive backlash if they wanted to drill offshore. But I mean, what could happen, David?
In terms of accidents?
Not only accidents, but just the fact that they want to explore offshore, off of the California coast. I mean, what are their plans?
Well, they're not real plans as we think of plans. I mean, this is an administration whose policy seems to be, if it's not broken, smash it. There's just a major commitment that he put out in ocean, you know, declared June Ocean Month, and all he talked about was, energy resources. So they really want to go back. I mean, even the Obama administration tried to do this. They tried to open up the Atlantic seaboard and the Arctic, and the popular backlash got him to do a 180. But they're kind of, it's a blind spot. And what's interesting, though, is on offshore drilling, people get it. And so in coastal communities like South Carolina and Florida, we even have Republican allies. When we launched the Sea Party under 91-foot inflatable life-size blue whale, we not only had the usual suspects like Bill McKibben, but we had folks like Mark Sanford, congressman from South Carolina, representing a coastal state. Very conservative, but his people are up in arms. And the next day, the Post and Courier, the main newspaper in South Carolina, had a headline, Mark Sanford from Tea Party to Sea Party. So this is going to be an uprising of coastal peoples and also of people who get it elsewhere. We have the Inland Ocean movement now that when we had our Hill Day in May to lobby against offshore drilling and to protect the budgets of all these agencies, frontline agencies, we had delegations from Colorado, Ohio, Utah, Arizona, Vermont, and Michigan. People are getting that every state's a coastal state and every other breath we take's from the ocean.
Katie, what would you add?
I would add that, you know, since 1906, 157 monuments have been established by 16 presidents. The challenges that we've seen to these monuments in terms of reduction in size or rollback of protections, I mean, they haven't been reversed. But in terms of reducing the size of these monuments and in with the end goal of opening them up to extractive industry, we've never seen those reductions challenged in court. These are going to be incredibly unpopular reductions if they are suggested by the Trump administration. So in some ways, it's really frightening a lot of people, this review. And at the same time, there are so many groups ready to line up what, you know, has not been judicially established as a legal course of action in terms of reintroducing industry into these areas. So you know, for all of the sort of bad news, the good news is that there's a lot of work to be done and a lot of people are stepping up to do it.
Katie Enders is contributing editor at The Guardian, where she edits the This Land Is Your Land. It's a new series that holds politicians and corporate interests accountable for their environmental policies. And they raised almost $100,000 to launch this very important series. We're also joined today by David Helvarg. He is an award-winning journalist and author, executive director of Blue Frontier. That's an organization that works to protect our oceans and our coasts. And he's author of the book, The Golden Shore, California's Love Affair with the Sea. Today on Your Call, we are talking about how to keep public lands in public hands. And today is the last day to comment if you'd like to raise your voice about the future of the Channel Islands, Monterey Bay, Cordell Bank, and the Greater Farallones. You can head over to SaveOurMarineSanctuaries.org. You can also call the Department of Interior 202-208-3100. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we actually decided to change the show to focus on this Senate plan to cut Medicaid drastically and repeal Obamacare. The last time we did a healthcare show, we had full lines with a lot of concern, and so we decided to do that again. Just to give you the latest, to take your calls, so many people are concerned about the future of Medicaid, so we're going to do that tomorrow. Today, we are talking about the future of public lands. What can we do to ensure that our incredible public space stays in public hands? If you'd like to join us, there's so much going on right now. If you have any questions about where we are when it comes to public lands and our California coast, budget cuts to the Interior Department. The New York Times had a headline recently, as the Interior Secretary swaggers through the parks, his staff rolls back regulations. There's a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes, and that's why we're doing this show. So if you have any questions about public lands or if you'd like to add to the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio. Today we're joined by Katie Enders. She's contributing editor at The Guardian. She edits the This Land Is Your Land new series. David Helvarg is author of The Golden Shore, California's Love Affair with the Sea, and executive director of Blue Frontier. Here. You can also, if you're on Facebook, you can also watch today's broadcast. David, let's talk a little bit about Ryan Zinke. I thought this headline says it all with the New York Times. As the Interior Secretary swaggers through parks, his staff is rolling back regulations. What do we need to know about Ryan Zinke?
Well, I mean, he's very much a Western politician, and that he's pretty much, his policies are all pro public industries. I mean, like the public lands, you know, and the offshore oil that has essentially been subsidized by the government for years. It's the Guardian once described Western politics as rugged individualism with socialist infrastructure. So essentially, he's working to continue to subsidize major energy industries with oil and gas, for example. BOEM, which is located within the Department of Interior, the Bureau of Ocean Management, they're trying to open up all these new areas for new drilling. At the same time, they, in President Trump's offshore ocean energy executive order, they're trying to eliminate the one safety regulation that came out of the BP disaster in 2010 in the Gulf of Mexico, which is controls over the blowout controls.
And this would loosen safety rules on underwater drilling equipment.
Yeah, blowout preventers.
Right.
And this is the one rule that everybody agreed this is what caused this huge disaster that killed 11 workers and created the worst environmental disaster in history. Recent science is showing that fishery production is still down. Marine mammals like dolphins are still dying from the effects of that oil spill 7 years ago. Mm. And the one safety feature that came out of it is now, you know, they don't only want to open up more of the ocean, but they want to open it up in a more dangerous manner. And they're not listening to their own agencies like NOAA and the Coast Guard. In fact, initially, President Trump's budget was going to eliminate $1 billion from the Coast Guard, which then some people pointed out that they actually guard more of our border than the Border Patrol, since most of our border is ocean. They also stop more drugs than the FBI, the DEA, and every local police agency. And they also rescue people. So they dropped that out of their budget, but they kept cutting away at NOAA, which is an even smaller agency, but it's our lead agency for the oceans. Trump proposed $1 billion cut in NOAA, and then the House last week cut that to a $700 million cut, still eliminating anything that has the word climate attached, coastal zone management, coastal resiliency, planning for the disasters that we know are coming along our coastlines as they become more populated, as sea levels rise. I mean, the funny thing is, so Interior controls the offshore oil. NOAA controls pretty much all the science and management. NOAA's Undersecretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, who's a billionaire friend not only of Trump but of the Koch brothers. Mm. And he's got one of his villas, one of his smaller $50 million villas, about 2 miles from Trump's place at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach. He also keeps his $150 million art collection down there. Right. So what's interesting is I wrote a piece for the LA Times that Florida's now our national model, which is denial in the capital and frantic activity locally. In Palm Beach, the city managers actually spent $150 million for pumps that are pumping the rising waters on the ocean side into the intercoastal. This is protecting, if these pumps weren't being installed, Mar-a-Lago would lose 25% of its property within the next couple of years. And of course, Wilbur Ross's insurance rates on his art collection would go up.
Katie, this New York Times piece about Ryan Zinke points out that on June 15th, between 7 and 8 p.m., at least 24 senior career officials at the Interior Department received emails informing them that they would be resigned to new positions. It's not unusual for new administrations to make personnel moves, but many of these employees said the moves appeared intended to undermine the department's work on environmental priorities. Yeah. And they've been replaced with a lot of people who've worked for the oil and gas industry. And they've been working behind the scenes very quickly. Recently, the staff filed a legal proposal to rescind the country's first safety regulation on fracking. Can you give us more information on this?
Just first to say, I think Zinke has been a radical disappointment to moderates and conservative public land advocates in the West. I just came back from a trip in Idaho that was sort of a public land summit with small businesses, a wildland llamas outfitters put this together. They're based in Montana, and they just brought together a number of industry leaders from outdoor industry. Someone from Patagonia was there. Somebody from Sage Fishing Rods was there. There was a representative from the Idaho State Fish and Wildlife Agency. And the overwhelming feeling was just, man, we had hopes for this guy. You know, Zinke fashions himself as a Teddy Roosevelt conservationist, as we've pointed out. His Teddy Roosevelt's great-grandson is radically disappointed in the guy. And it varies. I think the reactions to Zinke are vary from, you know, he's a wolf in sheep's clothing, which I heard this past weekend, and I also heard from, you know, somebody from the State Fish and Wildlife Agency in Idaho saying, you know, I think he's a good guy, but he is proving himself to be weak-willed and a company man, essentially, you know, not standing up to the administration, not adhering to his principles. You know, it's hard to say which it is, whether he's captured or whether he's spineless. But it's really fascinating, and his department, either way, is really moving quickly, as that great Times piece pointed out, to roll back regulations. So whether the guy's incompetent or not, he's really doing a lot already for oil and gas, and it's contrary to what, you know, small ranching outfits want. It's contrary to what hunters and anglers want. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see, because everything pointed towards Zinke having high hopes, you know, to run for governor of Montana and maybe, you know, presidential aspirations after that. Who knows? But, you know, he's really, according to the people who matter in Montana on this issue, I think, destroying a legacy that he could have created as a Teddy Roosevelt conservationist.
I think.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, he's clearly the one appointee, one cabinet member that people in the West, you know, actually thought was going to be on the side of sportsmen and the environment. But what is important to understand while we're looking at the daily tweet blogs and you know, tweet storms and Trump and the media saying, well, Trump hasn't accomplished any major legislation, but you have this powerful troika.
Yep.
Of Pruitt at EPA and Zinke at
yes.
Interior and Ross at Commerce that are just stripping away a generation of environmental protections, health and safety
yes.
and climate and public lands and all the things people value. I mean, our national parks have really been laboratories to understand climate change, and all that funding and all those positions are being taken away. NOAA is being stripped of all these activities that are essential for safety and protection along our coastlines. And Pruitt is essentially the intent, you know, we're only 6 months into it. The intent is to get rid of the basic foundational keystone laws on clean air and clean water.
Yes.
And in the interim, they're being very effective.
Katie, it's such a good point. I cringe anytime I hear one of these pundits say, Trump's not getting anything done. He's actually getting a lot done. What stands out for you?
Well, I sort of skipped over your question about these shakeups. I mean, they're very interesting, and you know, on their face, they're just moving people around. But there are a lot of nonprofits who are coming out and saying, you know, nonprofits out of Montana advocating for conservation, saying, don't shake. You know, they're rolling USDA agencies into one. They're doing the same at the EPA. They're doing their offices into one. They are very effectively moving people around into specializations that they don't understand. You know, climate change experts going to have to collect oil and gas fees. You know, it's clearly meant to create inefficacy and confusion. But these, you know, they're also through budget reductions and this argument that they want to streamline these agencies, they are creating a situation where these government agents who are responsible for regulating these industries are also responsible for meeting their numbers and collecting fees from extractive industry. So it's really interesting, and it is so important to keep in mind, as you say, Rose, that an awful lot is getting done in a quite stealthy and sort of sinister and clever way.
And stupid way also. I mean, just as Zinke's disappointing, you know, hunters and fishermen and hikers in the West, Ross at Commerce is disappointing commercial fishermen. I mean, just the other day, the New England Council, Fisheries Council, which is made up of fishermen, recommended that a major company that had intentionally overfished its quota be fined. And NOAA, under the billionaire, dismissed the fine. Apparently, they thought it was too regulatory. This is not what makes. I mean, America has been a leader for the last several years in terms of how we manage our fisheries and in terms of leading the world and protecting oceans with these large reserves. I went a year ago to an Our Ocean conference at the State Department put on by John Kerry, mm-hmm. and 90 nations were there. And those nations are continuing. They're going to have another. The next meeting is going to be in Portugal and then Brazil. And, you know, there's a global commitment. It's like with climate, our oceans, our public lands. America's been the model for how to protect natural lands to benefit the public, the people.
And this is an important point, Katie. Can you talk about the significance of either reassigning people who have dedicated their lives to public service, who work at the EPA, NOAA, or the Interior Department, for example, and then replacing them with people who work for industry, the oil and gas industry? I recently had dinner with some people who work in government in Washington, dedicated their lives to this. I mean, they said, we can go into the private sector and make so much more money, but we're dedicated to ensuring that we have coral reefs in the future, to ensuring that our oceans are healthy. And they're in shock. I mean, they said that everything is at a standstill. They don't have, an executive director. They're not getting funding to have the meetings that they need with the fisheries departments across the country. I mean, these are major, major changes.
I think that's an excellent point, Rose. I mean, they are also leaving open a lot of essential positions so that there are spaces in these critical departments that have no leadership at the moment. So this is happening on a national level, but I'd also like to take a moment to think about, you know, what is happening on a more sort of local level. Federal land management agencies have had their budgets cut and cut and cut over the years. And this is a trend that's going to be accelerated under Trump. And again, I just can't keep thinking about being in Idaho with this guy from the Idaho Fish and Wildlife Agency. You know, apart from what the Trump administration is doing, he talked about what happens when you cut the education and outreach components of a federal land management agency. These agencies become box checkers. They become people whom you have to go through for bureaucratic sort of steps. They used to be public service agencies. They used to be there available to teach people how to get out, how to safely, you know, work in the backcountry, how to move through it, how to interact in a sustainable way with their environment. And there's great sadness, I think, in federal land management agencies, in state land management agencies, about these people who have this incredible capacity to be educators, to bring the future generations out to appreciate public land, and instead they're just being reduced to, you know, the people who issue you a permit. And that has a real sort of trickle-down effect in the way that everybody thinks about these agencies and sort of the role that they play in our lands.
David, what would you add?
Just that there's resistance. I know people in NOAA and EPA and a couple of folks at Interior as well. And they're our friends. They've dedicated their lives to protecting the public lands and waters and making them available to we the people. And they're very upset. And they're also looking to places like California. John Laird, our Secretary of Resources, talked about committing $20 million the state's committed to new lawyers to just defend the protections that we have. You know, California sets the standard. But what Sam Farr, who just recently retired as congressman from Monterey, used to tell me that California is the only place where you could get elected or lose your job based on your attitude towards coastal protection and offshore oil. I think that's changing. I think that's going to have a lot of effect in 2018 in places like Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina even. People don't want their access to their parks and wildlands taken away. They don't want oil on their beaches. And there's good economic arguments as well as, you know, from a health point of view, from an economic point of view, we have a blue economy. We have an outdoor recreational economy. We have a, you know, as I said, I just went diving down in the Channel Islands. Is everybody who's not – NOAA just did a report that, you know, every year $200 million of recreational fishing in our sanctuaries. I'm sure there's at least that much in diving and sailing and just the, you know, the hard to put a dollar figure on just being able to stand on the shore at sunset and look out and see, you know, pods of dolphins and you know, shearwaters skimming, pelicans skimming. Mm. We all gain something. We all have a moment. And we get so much from our lands and oceans in terms of recreation, transportation, trade, clean energy, just that sense of awe and wonder that I am hopeful that people are going to give something back. They're going to mobilize and stop the madness.
David Helvarg is an award-winning journalist, executive director of Blue Frontier, and author of the book The Golden Shore, California's Love Affair with the Sea. We're also joined today by Katie Ender. She edits The Guardian's This Land is Your Land series. Katie, I've been checking the series just to stay up on all of this, and you've got a story called Trump Plan Could Open Giant Sequoia Monument to Logging and Wildfires, as the administration plans to roll back protections on public lands. Some are calling for a counterintuitive plan to save California's giant trees. What do we need to know about what could happen in Sequoia National Park?
It's an interesting piece. I mean, there's so much going on right now with our public lands. We have had sort of growing wildfire issues across the West. And, you know, unfortunately, these agencies that need to be solving problems in regards to drought and warming are now being distracted by industry, which has been invited in to lobby really hard for, you know, its own interests. So, you know, local councilors around Sequoia National Monument have voted 3-2 to write a letter to President Trump requesting that Sequoia National Monument be shrunk in size so that logging can return to that area. This was a national monument designated by President Clinton, and it is an area that really needs some attention in terms of how local agencies or government agencies are going to address the threat of wildfire and the threat of drought. You know, trees in California are being hammered really hard. Tree die-off is pretty spectacular, and that contributes to this huge sort of combustion potential in these areas that are really sacred to us. So unfortunately, you know, the guy who introduced this legislation around Sequoia National Monument, or introduced this vote to reduce Sequoia National Monument, Worthley, you know, worked for a decade for timber industry around Sequoia National Monument, which isn't something that you necessarily hear about in terms of that vote, but it's, you know, it's definitely a matter of timber being pitted against outdoor recreation.
Your colleague Joanna Walters has another very important piece. In the Grand Canyon, uranium mining threatens a tribe's survival. The Havasupai Native Tribe, they're attempting to fight back against the operation of a uranium mine that they say could contaminate their sole water source. This is obviously in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting in terms of these threats of extractive industry, you not only have agencies under the Trump administration advocating for the opening up of public lands to further extractive industries, but also a huge push at the same time to roll back any requirement that they, you know, carefully monitor their work. And Scott Pruitt at the EPA has said that, you know, the only conservation work he wants to focus on is Superfund, you know, the cleanup of massive industry pollution, and he wants to reduce that budget by 25%. So it's really a perfect storm of threats.
Right, along with the minerals, they want to mine minerals on the seamounts that are part of the new Canyons and Seamounts National Marine Monument off New England. Mm. So it's really out of control, and as she just said, I mean, we're in the footprint, we're in a crisis. You know, the U.S. Forest Service budget's being eaten up by firefighting. I spoke to Forest Service Fire Chief down in Southern Sierra last summer. She said that in her worst nightmare, she never imagined 35 years of work that we would lose the pine forests of the Southern Sierra. Wow. They're all gone. Mm. They're dead. We're in a climate crisis in which we have to protect what we can. We're really in a situation of triage and make a rapid transition to the new next generation of energy, which is where all the jobs are going anyway. And now we're facing this last, hopefully final backlash that attacks the value of protection and restoration and new directions.
Well, we did a show on Tuesday or Monday about Al Gore's new film. I hope you can listen to that. And then be sure to see Chasing Ice and Chasing Coral, both on Netflix. We've done shows about both of those. We're getting calls from listeners saying that when they call in to the Interior Department, they get a message saying the number is not in service. Katie, have you heard about this?
Well, this has been a chronic problem with politicians in D.C. You've heard this around healthcare, I imagine, but there has been, you know, the offices that are fielding these comments have not made a concerted effort to have enough phone lines open to receive all of the calls that they've been getting. When I've called the Interior Department for clarification around dates and comment periods closing around national monuments, it hasn't been the most receptive office for comments or even getting the dates right. I literally had somebody at the Interior Department give me the wrong date for the closing of national monument comment period. So be persistent. Call the people that you can. It's definitely an uphill battle, but absolutely make your voice heard.
David, no working phone number?
For official purposes, just today, you got to get your written comments in online to the Department of Commerce. And I talked to NOAA people, and they're telling me they're being intentionally slowed down. The public access is going to become more difficult, and the public's just going to have to go to where these people go, their fundraisers, their public meetings. And the bureaucrats, that is the agency people who are, in charge at EPA, NOAA, and Interior, they can duck us, but our elected representatives can't duck us. We got to go to their get in their faces and remind them that they work for us.
And if you're just tuning in wondering what we're talking about, today is the last day to express your comments on what's in store for the future of the Channel Islands, Monterey Bay, Cordell Bank, and the Greater Farallones. And I've been giving out the Interior Department's phone number for people who don't use computers, 202-208-3100. But as you just heard, the number's not working for some reason. As David said, his contacts at NOAA are saying that things are being slowed down. But you can go online to saveourmarinesanctuaries.org, saveourmarinesanctuaries.org. 8:59 Pacific time tonight is the final time to make your voice heard. And I hope you can share this with your circle of friends, family, and colleagues.
And that website will put you directly through to the Department of Commerce website that's taking comments, because if you try and go to Department of Commerce, it's like a 14-step process that makes it very difficult to get where you need to go.
Wow.
So we're creating, people who care about California's sanctuaries, creating facilities. You can go to bluefront.org.
Thank you. David Helvarg is an award-winning journalist, author of The Golden Shore, and Katie Enders edits the This Land Is Your Land series for The Guardian. David and Katie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rose.
And big thanks to Ellie Budner for producing today's show. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. Thanks for joining us.